Okay, I want to welcome everyone today. We are still looking in Genesis, and given the pace and progress that we are making, I suspect that's a phrase that I will say a few more times. In any event, if you will find, please, chapter 10. Having found chapter 10, if you'll back up to chapter 9, we'll be ready to start. My plan this morning is to have us look at chapter 9, chapter 10, chapter 11 in the time that we're together this morning. And there's a number of different things in here. The first thing I want to make sure you hear from me is a scripture in this area. There is probably less clear a message coming out of these three chapters than there is out of any place before or after. Whatever else you may think when you start reading through here, you will probably find yourself thinking, what is this supposed to mean to me? And I'm acknowledging that that is a reaction that I think is reasonable based on this. Now, I want to remind you of where we were last time. Coming out of chapter 9, we had come down to about verse 17. The ark had come to rest. Noah lets the animals begin to go, doing some sacrificing to God in the process. And in that process, God reiterates the covenant that he had promised he would make with Noah and his sons and with their descendants, and a covenant which was the first of five covenants that we see in the Bible. And last week I walked you through the five covenants that I see prominently in the Old Testament. I want to finish the thought of those covenants with reminding you of a hymn that some of you, I hope many of you, will know, that one verse says, "His oath, his covenant, his blood, support me in the overwhelming flood. When all around my soul gives way, he then is all my hope and stay. On Christ the solid rock I stand. All other ground is sinking sand." And with what we did last week, I'd like you to just use that as a sort of a coda to what we talked about. I think that old hymn expresses a whole lot what's there. It is God's covenant with us, and I took you through a part in the Abraham covenant to help you see that in some detail. Now, you come to verse 18. The sons of Noah who came out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. That is not, I think, listed in order of age. Japheth, I think, is the oldest of the three. Ham being the father of Canaan. Ham, we are told later, had four sons, and for some reason, the Bible writer is choosing to focus on one of Ham's four children, a child named Canaan. Now, those of you who know something about the rest of the Bible, where does Canaan finish in the rest of the Bible? Where does that word, that term show up? That is the people that were in the promised land that when Abraham was promised the promised land, these were the ones who were already occupying it. The Canaanites were seen in the rest of the Bible record as being those who seemed to live most cleanly and most clearly in opposition to God. And that picture of coming into the promised land with that, I think there's a foreshadowing of that here. He had other sons, but somehow something special centers on this one. You will notice in the next two chapters or three chapters, this is not the only time when that happens. Okay? These three were Noah's sons, and from these the whole of the earth was populated. Now I want to pause for just a moment and take you to chapter 10. These are the descendants of Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, to whom sons were born after the flood. Who is the first son listed? Verse 2. No, who's the first son? Japheth. Okay. I think that's the oldest one. And so when he starts listing listing descendants, when he lists the genealogy, he does start with the oldest son. But he's still listing Shem first. Come over to chapter 11, verse 10. What does it say? These are the descendants of Shem. Let me try to show you what's happening across here. We've already seen this a couple of times. You're going to see it if you're watching for it probably 8 or 9 more times in the book of Genesis. When you see the phrase that's at the first of chapter 11, verse 10, these are the descendants of Shem, or this is the heritage of Shem, or this is the account of Shem. That phrase essentially starts a new section of Scripture. Okay, that essentially starts a new section of Scripture. We've seen it a couple of times already, and now we're seeing it again. So look what happens. These are the three sons. Chapter 9, verse, 18 or 19 says, the whole of the earth was populated from them. Come over to chapter 10. Here are the descendants of those. And then you come to chapter 11, verse 10, and it focuses on one of the three and gives you one more look at that. Okay, what's going on here? God has made provision for people to be put right with Him. And it's going to take a long time for all of that to unfold. But God's plan is coming through Noah. It's coming through one of His three sons. It's coming through this son. Which son is that? Chapter 11, verse 10. Shem. And so when you see what follows chapter 11, verse 10, follow down to verse 26. You're a long way through this genealogy. When you get to verse 26 of chapter 11, you come to Terah, and Terah had how many sons?
Three
sons, and one of those was
Abram.
And now, most of the remainder of the book of Genesis is going to be following Abram, who becomes Abraham, and then his son Isaac, and then his son Jacob, and then his son Joseph. It's going to be the story of those four. Is going to be the main part of the story. And what you're hearing is a transition into that. You're looking at the whole of the world. You're looking at one family, Noah's family. You're looking at one son. And then you follow that son's line or heritage. And you find Abraham. And now the Bible opens back up with a detailed look of what God is doing in, through, and around Abraham. So that's the overarching thrust of these three chapters. Everybody okay so far? Okay, now, let's go back and dig in just a little bit. I'm going to go back to chapter 9. I'm going to look at verse 20. There are commentators who see verse 20 and the couple of verses that follow as evidence that God is in charge of the writing of the Bible. Because if people had been in charge of the writing of the Bible, they might not have put this in. Let me say that again. If humans, without reference to the Lord, were putting together a record, they probably wouldn't have shown you the warts. Here's Noah. He's come off the ark. He's had this encounter with God where the covenant has been affirmed. He has seen the rainbow in the sky with God's voice telling him what the rainbow is going to mean. And now, what does he do? This may not have been the first thing he did, but it's among the things he did. What did he do? It took a while to finish it, but he basically got drunk. What did he have to do to accomplish this? He had to plant a vineyard. How long does it take before a vineyard produces? Anybody tried? It takes a while. He finally harvests. When he harvests, what does he have to do? He has to go through the process of taking that and turning the grapes into wine. He finally gets finished with all that, and what does he do? It only takes about 2 verses. Noah, a tiller of the soil, was the first to plant the vine. He drank some of the wine, and while he was drunk, he lay, my translation says, uncovered in the tent. What does yours say? Sorry? It does not say naked. What does it say? Naked. Okay, I'm from the South. I know what the word is pronounced. I know how that's pronounced. Okay. What does a fair-minded person say when presented with this information?
Why
did Noah? Let me start with a slightly earlier one. What did he do wrong?
Well,
He got drunk. What category of human behavior might we put this in? What was the subject in the worship service this morning? This was sin. All right? This was sin. He's not just gotten drunk. He's gotten slap, fall down drunk. What's the next verse? I'm sorry. Let's stay with this for a moment. What did he do wrong? Why did he do this? I suggest there is one answer we must start with. That answer is, I don't know. Except that this is what human beings tend to do. They tend to make very poor choices. Now let's carry it a step further. Why might he have done this? I heard somebody say celebrate. I don't think so, but I agree that that should be put into the options we consider. Ask yourself, what would he be celebrating? He might be celebrating his own survival, but how many people died? Maybe he's experiencing loneliness and this is a way to... Yeah. This could be he's suffering loneliness, he's suffering depression, and this is a way to just sort of quiet those voices or to deal with that, because some people do. Okay? She drove me to drink, they said. She used a Plymouth. Make it through. Why did he do this? We don't really know. One can suspect these things, which could lead us to say what? Well, son of a gun, Noah is only human. Does that line up with the morning's sermon?
What was it? What kind of stuff? Foolish stuff?
Stupid, I think, was the word. St. David, I think, St. David's prayer. Right. You've heard the prayer of St. Francis. We heard. If you weren't in the morning service yet, we heard about the prayer of St. David. You'll enjoy that when you get there. Remember what the character in the Faulkner novel said? Did you write that down?
No.
Did you have your little notebook and write that down?
No.
You don't have to sin. You ain't got to sin, but you can't help it. That's the human dilemma. Now, what happens next? Please read it, and then let's euphemize it where it doesn't get too detailed here. What happens? One of his sons comes along. Which one? And what does he do? Told his two brothers outside. What do the two brothers do? They get a cloak and cover him up. What exactly was the way that they did it? They walked backwards so that they would not see their father's nakedness. When Noah awoke from his stupor, that's my translation. How does yours render that one? From his wine. When he awoke from his stupor, he learned what his youngest son, here's my translation, note the verbs, had done to him. Very strange word. Commentators are all over the map on what that means. Since they are, I will be too. I don't know how to interpret that piece, but I do know how to look at the next part. Noah does something that God has refrained from doing, except to Cain. God curses. But who does he curse? He does not curse Ham. Look at your Bible. Who does he curse? He curses Canaan, that one of the four sons. He blesses Shem and Japheth. And which one does he bless first? Shem, who's the oldest. Does that ring as if there's a little something in there that we don't know? Why would he mention the younger one first? We don't know. But I think there's something there for us to note. Everybody still ready? Ready to keep going? He blesses the two, blessing the younger one before the older one, and we don't know why. He curses not the one who walked in, but he curses one of his sons. Commentators go all kinds of places with this. Let me try to help you parse through this just a little bit. His seeing his father's nakedness, how did that come about? Accidental or deliberate? Answer number one, we don't know. Having said we don't know, take a guess. Possibly accidental. Okay? What does he do? Leaves him in that condition and goes and tells his brother. So why is somebody cursed for this? What did Ham do that deserved this? What's the first answer? I'm trying to get you in the habit here. We don't know. Start there so that you understand carefully that what I'm giving you is something for you to think about, that maybe it will line up with things and maybe God will reveal something clearer to you. Okay, number one, he didn't cover him up. Number two, he told his brothers. Okay? Now, when I look through all that I've found of what the commentators have said, and the commentators are all over the map. Okay? I mean, there are some wild speculations out there of what this all means. He didn't cover him up, and his brothers did. What needed covering?
Sin,
just like back in the garden. Just like back in the garden. Something needed covering. The ones who covered it were blessed. The ones who went and told about it was cursed. Or at least somebody in his descendants was cursed. You getting anywhere yet? Why was he cursed? What's the first answer? We don't know. Let's keep that in front of our minds. But let's take it a step further. What could be going on here? What do you do when you see a brother fall into sin? There's a little message that might be hiding here. We're not sure. This one is obscure. But there's a hint that says maybe we do something, what? To try to put the person back to a condition where we can interact with them in dignity. Two did it, one didn't. What's the second thing? Yeah. And going and telling people. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I want you to understand I'm out on a limb. I think the limb is big enough to hold my weight, and that's saying something. But see if you can see this with me. How would he have said what he said to his brothers? Because I think the crux of the whole matter is here. I don't know for sure. Please do not fail to hear that. I don't know for sure. I'm offering this for you to think about. I think it was the way he told his brothers. He did nothing to try to restore this person to dignity. And he told his brothers. How did he tell his brothers? What are the possibilities? He could have said this with deep sadness, and he could have said it with smirking. If he said it with smirking, what tone would he have used? Smirking. Fine, I'm sorry. And what would have been conveyed along with it?
Lack of respect.
Yeah, but keep going. Where had these guys all just come from? They'd come from the ark. Why were they in the ark? Because God was preserving them. Preserving them from what? From death that came to all these people who had been sinning. What could he have said? He could have said, in effect, look at that. The guy God thought was so great. Look how far he's fallen. As opposed to what? Oh my God, the greatest of us has fallen. What can we do to help each other lift ourselves up? What can we do under God's good grace to try to help restore a brother? Do you remember how James put it? If you see a brother overtaken in a fault, remember what he said? Think to yourself, that could happen to me, and take the steps that you can to restore your brother. I think way over in James is an echo of this moment. I think he smirked. I think he made fun of his father. I think he lumped his father with all those who were lost in the flood. Did his father deserve it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe so. Because Noah, just like us, was a sinner. Somehow, in the middle of this, two brothers, probably led by the younger. That's the implication I see. I don't know for sure. Keep hearing that. But I think led by the younger said, this is not something to laugh about. This is something to weep about. And we can at least take one concrete step to give him dignity back. So what do you do when a brother or sister falls around you? Kick them when they're down? Or do what you can? Not to cover up the sin. I don't think that's the message that's here. But to do what God says needs to be done to try to provide a covering for sin. That's a difference from covering up, I think. I don't know for sure what this little section means. But I think it's way more important than a lot of people see. And I think there's a hint of stuff that shows up all through the rest of the Bible. Especially, how do I react when someone falls? Especially, how do I react when someone falls that God has elevated to a place of prominence in His service? And I think there's a question we can ponder for our day. Right.
I think just in general terms, in humans, I think Noah probably felt kind of chosen by God, and this was kind of his fall, kind of like the Garden of Eden. What I take from
I'm that, affirming that I see that.
Yeah,
I think I see that.
Those parallels, but I think the bigger thing is that it proves his mortality also. That even though he was chosen by God, he survived the flood, he still goes back to the Garden of Eden, even he's going to die.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Bill. You suggested that maybe it was a smirk, it was a smirky reaction that Shemmy had. You also said maybe he reacted out of sadness. I would offer there's another S that I think would be my reaction if I had that situation, if I walked in on my father. And that would be shock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And shock that my father would be in that, would allow himself to be found in that condition. And then my father finding out that I have found him in such a condition out of his own shame, rather than saying, you know what, that was really bad. But I'm going to react out of anger at my own inability to control myself, and I'm going to make you pay for my mistakes.
That's attractive. That's an attractive point of view. The only piece of that is God seems to affirm Noah's reaction. And I think if the reaction were one out of anger, God would have found some way to disavow it, to sort of overturn it, and put something else in its place. And I don't... There's something happens about that fourth son of Ham. I don't understand it. I don't understand it at all. But there's something there that seems like what Noah says God is affirming. And that's the piece that led me to the other position. Mm-hmm. But I see what you're talking about.
And
the big thing in here is we don't know.
Yeah.
We
and
don't
I
know.
And I intended to offer another, a certain
right,
avenue.
Right.
That is shock. This
mm-hmm.
is total shock.
Mm-hmm.
That I would see my father in that condition.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing has led me to think that my father would ever do that.
Right.
And I mean, if I saw my dad that way, I'd be in shock.
And there might be more, but these might be the big three. Paralyzing shock. Smirk and sort of a sense of superiority. We'll look at him. And the deep sadness of, oh my gosh, what are we going to do when the greatest of us has fallen so clearly? I see a Garden of Eden story repeated. Ray's put it better than I did, but I see that repeated, and that's what I was trying to bring out. I saw your hand, and then I heard a voice over here.
In verse 24, when Noah awoke from his wine, he
he knew what his youngest son had done. How did he know?
Mine says he learned, so I don't know
how
that.
How did he learn? Did other brothers tell him? Yeah, as the other sons?
What's the first answer question? That's a great question. I don't know. There wouldn't be servants around to tell him. It could be that he saw this covering over him and asked what it was for. I don't, it's a great question. I don't know.
I was going to ask the same question. You just talked for an
hour.
Maybe there was a pattern here. Maybe Noah would not have expected him to do that because of previous relationship, previous behavior, previous responses prior to this event. I don't know.
And this is a stretch, but I don't think it's too far of a stretch. The 12 disciples included Judas. Something, I don't know what to do with all of those pieces, but there's something going on here that's interesting and seems to carry into the enmity that existed then, way back in these days, in the Middle East, and which exists now in the Middle East between the people who are trying to live there. Okay?
Something I noticed is that they keep identifying that 22 verse, Ham, the father, it's pointing to Canaan, evidently kind of like preparing us for this lineage to be the one that turns away from God. Does yours 22 have that in Ham, the father, Canaan?
Yes.
Why didn't they just say Ham?
I got to keep saying, I don't know, but something is happening that carries that sense of a people is going to grow from this who seem to live in opposition to God. And when the promised land event comes and Abraham comes in, that's the people group against which his family rubs.
Okay, call the message,
maybe. Okay, we have 15 minutes to do two chapters. Let's see how we can do. Chapter 10 essentially tells you in very brief wording a view of how the earth was repopulated. Okay? I refer you back I don't know where it was. Okay, take a look at chapter 9, verse 1. God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, breed. Boy, that's an awful verb for a Bible to use. I hope yours uses a more gentle one, but I have a feeling that this is maybe accurate. Breed, multiply, and fill the earth. Be the terror and dread of all the animals on land and all the birds of heaven and everything that moves on land and all the fish of the sea. They are placed in your hands. Every living thing that moves will be yours to eat, no less than the foliage of the plant. I give you everything. And then he says, the only thing is, don't eat the meat while the blood is still in it.